just, and I appreciate this is an informational session is what it is.
Yep.
But I just want the record to be absolutely clear that this is being presented to us as an informational session and nothing else. And really, these are probably changes that should probably go to the implementation committee or the committee working to amend the ordinance, because I just don't want, I'll go ahead and say it, some smart lawyer to take the public record and use that against the public trust later on. So this is just informational. These are things on the horizon. Just be aware of this commission is what you're telling us.
Right, and okay. I will assume, and maybe rightly, maybe wrongly, that the Board of County Commissioners, when this goes to them, which it apparently will at some point through staff, not through this commission, may ask this commission to chime in. And some of these issues kind of are blended into the statutory fix. If it's better not to mention any of these, that's okay as well. But just for informational purposes, I was bringing them up.
Yeah, that's all I was saying, is because I don't want this session to be misinterpreted or misconstrued later on down the road as we say yay or nay on any of these ordinance changes or any possible advisory opinions in the future. Because as Mr. Berger, I'm sure, will recognize that every situation is different on its own facts, and you don't want to hamstring this commission in advance. But I find this information useful. Thank you.
Yeah, I will second that. I appreciate the opportunity to ponder this with the possibility that it might, that we might be asked to express an opinion on it at some future point. So
I think as long as we don't take any action on it,
right. And I suppose, I guess that would be, the record is clear that this is informational, this is a workshop,
right.
And no decisions will be made. The next item, number three, actually should have been in the active request, because I have received a number of questions regarding, can I campaign for my father, can my wife campaign, you know, that kind of thing, am I, as an official or an employee, not permitted to do any of that? And so I wanted to bring that up, just because this is going to be an issue. I may have some proposed advisory opinions to show you at the next meeting on this issue. And I didn't know whether Mr. Berger had anything he wanted to add to this campaign.
Mr. Johnson, what provision of the code would be implicated by that?
Well, if they're working for a campaign, for example, somebody who's running for county commission,
mm-hmm.
and an employee of the county is actually either getting paid or working on that campaign, it may become an issue that has that the commission does have jurisdiction over.
Right. I'm just asking under what yeah. portion of the ordinance would that fall?
Well, prohibited contracts would be one. If there's payment involved.
Okay.
Misuse of office could be a possibility of some sort or other.
But again, it's going to depend on the specifics of the individuals. Okay.
Is this at all have to do with that email I saw regarding members of the county audit committee?
That's one of the emails that was sent. It was, I believe, it was an individual who was involved in the county auditing committee. And also was going to be the treasurer, I believe, of a campaign I want to say county commission, but I'm not sure if that was the office. Yeah, that was one of the several letters.
Are there any ordinances that prohibit county employees from working campaign for their employers? Because it's gone on for years.
As long as it doesn't interfere with their day-to-day job. County employees have run for county commission.
Yeah. But I mean, like your employer asks you, your constitutional officer says, you're going to help me in my campaign.
And obviously that
like Mr. Jornby was
been stepped over
caused Mr. Jornby to lose his job in that particular instance.
Right.
But there are state laws regarding campaigning out of a public building.
Yeah.
There are
federal laws as well.
Yeah. That way.
And what would we be expected to do? We'd be expected to give an opinion on stuff.
Well,
like that?
Some of these, again, if there's no, the commission may choose not to give an opinion if there's no jurisdiction, if it's not a violation of the code. And again, it's up to the sense of the commission. You may want to be fairly liberal with your interpretation as far as giving your advice as to what appearances as well as pure violations of the code or not. And if a county employee or an official is asking for an advisory opinion, it's not a complaint, so there's no jurisdictional issue, provided it's somebody who comes within the code. I think that they actually would be entitled to an advisory opinion. No, there's no violation of the code as such.
And were we to give such an opinion, if a matter later came before us and by way of a complaint or an investigation, we wouldn't in any way be hamstrung by that opinion.
There would be apparently be additional facts.
It'd be fact driven.
Every advisory opinion will state, given the facts as presented.
Right.
Because that's the rub. If you don't get all the information, your advisory opinion is worthless. The next is ad hoc committee members appointed by staff and without legislative or quasi-judicial authority. Are they subject to the Code of Ethics?
Could you tell me what sort of person that would be?
I'll turn that over, because this is actually something that was brought to my attention by Mr. Berger. Because there's a prospective change to the code, because some committees and commissions are left out that aren't directly appointed by the board of county commissions. But I'll
turn this over. Well, there's a couple of issues here, but the ad hoc one first. There are a couple of contexts that I can give you. A lot of times there are standing advisory boards that break into subcommittees that may or may not even be members of the actual seated board. They're not appointed by the county commission. It's not a board created by them. So by definition, even in here, they're not really public officials.
Right.
Well, thank you. And one of the issues with these ad hoc boards is, and it, this is in my experience, a lot of times they'll actually serve for a meeting. And they'll show up once, and to have them do all of this for a single meeting. And there's actually a few boards that, for example, boards that hear appeals in the land use realm. The idea, and it can be very difficult, is to find people who are totally unrelated to the case. Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, we go to Martin County to get a traffic engineer, and for one hearing once, one and done. And those kinds of ad hoc people, it didn't seem to make sense to subject them to the jurisdiction for the afternoon that they're drive down to do this. So that's the kind of committee we're talking about.
And there's no request at this point on this. I'm just bringing it up as a possible future request for advisory opinion. And I think that there's an amendment that county staff is going to be presenting to the BCC on that in regards to which committees are subject to the code.
Okay. Let's take this opportunity to take a short break.
Okay.
Great. 15 minutes. 10 minutes. You gotta leave.
I gotta leave before 30.
Yeah. Take a 10-minute break.
Oh, yeah. 1:30. All right. This was one of those days that there were a few cats.
Can you leave the point there?
Well, as long as we can get going.
Okay.
10 minutes. It depends if you agree with it.
Yeah, we're just not going to comment on anything.
We have so far, right?
Yeah. Should we go?
All right. Yeah. Meeting's back in session.
Yeah.
Yep, Mr. Berger, you can continue your report.
Thank you. What we've done, the ordinance that's attached here, there's highlights, underline, and strike through to give you an idea of the kind of things that I've encountered with Al. We've sort of talked about, look at it as a preview, coming attractions of the kinds of glitches that we've encountered. The ordinance says that as a commission, you all are looked upon as, you know, a body that recommends changes. So at some point, we would look to you for yay or nay on this. Again, I understand this is a workshop, but these are the kinds of, these are sort of quick fixes that we wanted to make sure we had on the books sooner than later, if possible, okay? Just going through these, I think we've done a lot of them, but if you look at page 3, What was this? Okay, we were on letter G. This had to do with official or employee, the definition of an advisory board member, and this was something that Bob Weissman has recommended. The way this was written, an advisory board member covered by all of this would have to be serving on a board that the county commission created, but there are actually a number of boards that aren't really county boards, but that the Board of County Commissioners makes appointments to, and Mr. Weissman would like to have those particular appointees be covered by this law as well.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. Regional Transit Authority, like Tri-Rail, mm-hmm. South, there's lots. The Metropolitan Planning Organization, Healthcare District. There's even certain boards that are related to the Tourist Development Board that aren't actually a governmental board, nonprofits that get a bulk of their money from us, frankly, where the county commission has multiple members appointed. Those are examples.
These are significant boards, is what you're telling us.
They
as opposed
can be.
To, they can be,
yeah.
As opposed to the Lower East River Swale Improvement District type board.
It'd be a very important board if you live there.
Okay, but yeah, I understand.
Swales.
I understand the gist.
Yeah, but they can be significant.
We have a problem having them subject to our requirements and the other members of that same board not having to adhere to these things?
Not really. Although the commission can think about it and decide what they would like. I mean, a lot of these people are, a lot of the appointees in a lot of cases are already public officials covered some way or another, if not by this board, by the state law or something else. But it's something to think about, and Mr. Weissman saw it as sort of a loophole, because in the county commission's eyes, an appointee is an appointee, whether it's, you know, our land use advisory board or the, you know, Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council.
Are they representing the interests of the county?
Yes. Presume a theory. That's the idea.
Or if they're getting county money for any reason.
Yeah. They're looking out for the county's interest because the county funds some of it. So that's what G is. And H, and this is another issue that has come up a lot. I don't know if Al has mentioned this or not.
Yeah, if I can give you some background, because a number of requests for advisory opinions have come in regarding people who are on boards or even serving as an elected official in a local municipality that also works for the county. And the way the code is written right now, you'd have to interpret whether they apply or not, because they're not excluded from the code. I'll give you an example. Is Matt Wilhite, who is a council member, vice mayor of the village of Wellington. Well, he's also a firefighter. Now, Wellington has interlocal agreements with the county, so a strict reading of the prohibited contractual relationships and applying them to municipalities would mean that he would have to give up his job as a firefighter or give up his job making $600 a week. A month, rather, as the vice mayor. That's, I think, what this is going to address here.
Yeah, and actually, the reverse of that too. There are a lot of people who work for governmental entities that serve on advisory boards of the county. It's the same kind of problem, but they're wearing a different hat. So a person who works for the water management district, we have multiple interlocal agreements with them, could serve on a water resources board of the county, and that again would have the same situation where a public official is employed by an entity that has contracts with the county. And I saw the point of this was to prevent using your public position from getting some sort of private gain. When the employer is a public agency, I don't see it, and I don't think that was what we intended.
Well, don't you do that by waiver?
The idea is there can literally be hundreds of interlocal agreements between the water management district, say in Palm Beach County, and what we think it makes better sense in this particular case to carve out the definition of outside employer or business, carve out governmental entities. And mind you, if it is the situation where an employee of another entity serving on an advisory board, if there was some vote that advisory board had that would inure to that guy's private benefit, that's still a voting conflict. So mm-hmm. We're not taking anything like that out of the mix. We're just eliminating the blanket prohibition that would otherwise apply. So that's one of them coming down the pike.
What would you say to the issue of the example that Mr. Johnson gave, where a firefighter, for example, who's also a city commissioner, and when the issue of matters of compensation or pension funds for either police or firefighters, I guess that's their county.
Right. That would be.
So it wouldn't be.
They wouldn't touch.
We wouldn't touch it.
No.
But just to extend the example, suppose a firefighter was a county commissioner, would there be a voting conflict with respect to pension fund issues?
Yeah, county employee can't be a county commissioner.
Okay. Never mind then.
I think we're covered there, too.
Okay.
The next correction is really simple. It's on page 4. This is just an oversight. I'd left out child from the family members. Kind of an obvious one, but a lot of words were going in and out of this. In a very short time, these things happen. So we'll be asking for that. If you shift to page 6, this is a policy issue that I think you all will want to discuss. And I think Al brought it up at the last meeting. There is a sort of a de minimis exemption in state law that's mm-hmm. $500 that is really archaic. And in light of the fact that our code is so much broader, we think it captured an awful lot of people that we might not have meant for it to capture. The rank and file guy who works for Road and Bridge, who works for the weekends for Home Depot, and there's a purchase agreement between Home Depot and the county, maybe we didn't want to prohibit that. That's something for you guys to think about. But there's a lot of those examples, a lot. And what Al and I were talking about, and if you look at, these are the list of exceptions to the prohibited conflicts, and we had 5 or 10, whatever you think makes sense. Maybe it would be 10 for the contracting entity and 5 for the individual salary. I don't know. These are things you can play around with. But the idea here is to give some sort of de minimis exception for those kinds of people, because I don't think that's what we were intending to capture. But that's for something you guys may want to discuss at a meeting in the near future. And then the last thing we already covered, which was the contingency prohibition. Yeah. So that's your preview. I just want to say, I understand it's a workshop, but this is something that our board will be looking to your board for some sort of feedback at some point down the road. A couple of them, like the de minimis exception, is a pretty broad policy statement that you guys will be making. It, I'm sure, at this deserves more discussion than what we're giving it today, but I certainly request, on behalf of the county at least, that you guys have a look at it mm-hmm. When you can get it on an agenda.
Do you have a time frame for the county to consider?
I do not, and everything has happened very quickly, and we will get to it as quickly as we can, and understand that you all have a lot of things on your plate too.
Mr. Berger, I don't think you were here at the early part of the meeting where we discussed the fine line between educating the community and advocating, because I think the commission is of one mind that we want to educate, but in no sense be seen as advocating a particular position. That's for elected officials.
Uh-huh.
So perhaps maybe, and I'm throwing this out as a thought off the top of my mind, perhaps if there is a request from the implementation committee or county commissioners or the county attorney for a particular request or thought with regard to an ordinance, I want to make sure that the commission not be seen as trying to change the law itself. But obviously, if you ask us for an opinion, you got five very independent-minded people up here. We're going to give you our opinions.
Isn't our portfolio include recommending changes to the county regarding
I think you are correct, Dr. Fiore. But I think perhaps how you approach it is the question, mm-hmm. as opposed to us volunteering suggestions. If we're asked for our thoughts on a particular point, at that point, I don't think we're advocating. We're responding to a question.
And we may well see, in our experience that is yet before us, things that might need to be changed or loopholes that might need to be filled, or in which case I would expect we would recommend those changes.
Okay. Just by way of the ordinance itself, Section 5, there is a provision that actually states that the commission shall, from time to time, review ordinances and shall report and make recommendations. So, I'm absolutely correct, Commissioner Farage, that there ought not be any advocacy, but I would recommend to this commission that you not take a back seat and wait and be reactive if the commission sees something that could work better or some injustice that's going on. There's two quick issues. We've covered just about everything. There's one issue that is time sensitive now. I just today received a request for an opinion, an official request for an opinion. And this is a 5C. I had a general request, not a general, but a not time-sensitive request from the fire chief. I think I sent all the commissioners a copy of that email talking about a vendor conference where the vendor wants to reimburse the county, and the county's going to reimburse the employee. What I got in today was, and I forwarded it, was a county employee who wants to attend, and the county wants to send, to an industry seminar, and that particular event, I think, and I'll submit an advisory opinion, is not covered by the code. In other words, if it's not a vendor but an industry event that the county selects to send and the county is going to reimburse and not the vendor, specifically excluded from the code. I didn't feel comfortable giving that advisory opinion without just bringing it up to the commission. The problem with waiting is this conference is in July. So the next meeting is not going to be till the third Tuesday in July unless we have a meeting earlier. So this one, perhaps we ought to make a decision on.
Can I just ask a question about this? The issue is about who pays for travel, who pays for lodging. There's no reason why the county can't just pay for lodging if they want the employee to attend. The employee does not have to take the lodging arrangements as offered.
Correct. I'm.
Why don't we?
Well, you might want to read your email. I understood it to read that the association is paying the lodging,
right,
for officers, people who are
on a commission meeting.
Yeah, on an officer level, and the and there's a vendor that contributes to the association, so it's an indirect
right
sort of thing.
Yeah, but so keep it clean.
I think the question is whether that may be the from a policy perspective, if I were that person's boss, that may be what I would tell them. But I think the question is, does it violate the code or not? And I think Mr. Johnson and the procedures we just adopted, I don't know that every advisory opinion has to come before the full commission. I think we have policies and procedures, and we ought to follow them. We ought to let this bubble up, and if it needs to be decided before we have another meeting, I think we have procedures to do that.
Okay. Telephonically or email?
Yeah. It says here the executive director submits the proposed opinion, draft opinion letter to the chair and the co-chair, who then determine whether to submit it to the full commission for review.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly do that.
The other option, I guess, is that the county commission can issue a waiver with respect to this matter, couldn't it?
At the next meeting?
I mean,
I just know for myself, I'd rather see, rather than trying to decide something quickly late in the afternoon, I'd rather see something in writing. Staff can send it to each of us, and if anyone has a problem, I think that can be vetted through
that
Mr. Johnson.
The Sunshine Law would prohibit a decision being made that way.
That's why I just suggested not to bring it up as an issue, since it's time sensitive, that, you know, just
now, maybe we need to get some guidelines measuring time sensitivity.
Right.
So that it's not 5 minutes before the meeting.
Right. And I did get this at 11:27 this morning, was the and it's not something that can't be dealt with between now and the next meeting, and possibly through a waiver.
Yes, sir. So I'm clear, Mr. Johnson. I think I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure I understand the parameters of the Sunshine Law. How would the procedure that we just talked about be violative of the Sunshine Law?
If I were to send a letter out to all the commissioners,
as opposed to Chairman Rogers and myself.
Well, let me back up. The procedure would not be a decision. The decision would be whether to send it before the entire commission, but not to make a decision on the letter itself. So, in other words, if I did a stare decisis type of letter, which I would show to Chairman Rogers, and he would look at it and say, well, it's already...